It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
The center of our diamond is really encouraging, and they're returning. So I think, you know, you add JD to that center, think about the leadership in our clubhouse from Josh Donaldson, Tulo, Russ Martin, obviously Jay Happ and Marco Estrada. Really, there's a lot to build from with that.
It's At the Letters for October 26th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Jay season's over, so I guess that's somewhat off-season mode now for this ball club.
We were just debating whether it is or is not the off-season. It's not the off-season until the World Series is over, I don't think.
Yeah. Even then, you have that five-day window where free agents can't yet talk to teams other than the one they just played for.
Yes, absolutely, which I'm sure will make all kinds of difference. If the Blue Jays really wanted to talk to Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista and Michael Saunders and Brett Cecil or whatever, they could have done that for months. They had a lot of time to do that, to leave it to 5 days.
I'll say there's a 0% chance that anything Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion signs in that five-day window.
Oh my God, right? Zero. Yeah. Less, yeah, absolutely. Because nil.
If you wait this long, you're going to test the market.
You're an idiot if you do. Like, why wouldn't you see what else is out there?
Unless they were to overwhelm you, but that's not the way this Blue Jays front office is going to operate.
You know, they're not going to put in like a bully offer in those 5 days and say, take it or leave it. That's not going to happen.
There's no chance.
That's not going to happen. They're going to test free agency, test the market, just like you or I would. It's a smart thing to do. I'm sure we'll talk about that today. We'll talk about other free agents. We'll talk about just what the Blue Jays might do in this offseason. And in the second half, we'll recap the over-unders from the beginning of the year, which have now been completed. And I do not expect that to go well for me.
You know, one category I know I won was the Josh Tolley home run.
JT money.
Yeah.
Didn't come through. Yeah. Didn't come through. I think I took more like big swings with the over-unders than you did. I'll say that. I went out on a limb a bit more.
Okay,
this is me just like just bracing myself for the crushing defeat that I'm about to suffer in the second half of this podcast.
Yeah, that'll be a fun segment.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism. So speaking of free agents, let me give you this question. Is there any pending Blue Jays free agent that you expect to re-sign with the team?
No.
Neither.
Yeah, I don't.
Not a single one.
Yeah. I could see, you know, Benoit coming back on a one-year deal. I could see Brett Cecil landing here on a three-year deal.
Right.
Even Encarnacion. I mean, you could see it happening. I just don't think any of those are likely to happen.
No, I don't expect any of them to be back.
Yeah.
Not a single one. And I feel, especially with Jose and Edwin, I mean, since last offseason, I've been saying very plainly, neither of these guys are coming back.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And I still think there is a bit of a groundswell of like optimism among Blue Jays fans who kind of think that, oh, maybe one of them will come back. They're not. It's over. It's over. They're not coming back.
Well, I think
you need to extinguish that.
And Ross Atkins, when he was talking to us and other members of the media on Monday, he kind of has to say that the Blue Jays are going to,
of course,
you know, talk to Encarnacion and Bautista and do that due diligence, make sure that they get a sense of where those players want to sign, where they want to end up. You have to do that. And this is the front office that's going to cover every base possible, but it doesn't mean it's likely to happen.
No, it's really just not. Edwin's going to get carried away by the market. The offers he's going to get in free agency are going to push his bidding into a territory that I think the Blue Jays front office will be extremely uncomfortable with. And I think just Jose Bautista, they've never aligned. Neither side has really agreed with each other on where Jose Bautista's value is or like what he, you know, what he should be paid going forward. And I don't expect that to change. I don't see, after the season Jose Bautista had, I don't see the Blue Jays coming up at all. They've probably even gone down from where they were before the year. And I don't see Jose Bautista in his camp. There's no reason for them to come down when he's about to hit free agency and gain leverage. So I just don't see them aligning at all. So it's not, and when they sign somewhere else, you know, 3 weeks later, some dumbwad's going to come out with a report. Blue Jays didn't even make an offer to them. The Blue Jays didn't even try. And everybody's going to go, bro, rabble, rabble, rabble. Don't let it happen to you. The Blue Jays have discussed with these guys what their terms would be, what it would take. They know what it would take. If the Blue Jays aren't comfortable paying that, It makes no sense for them to make a dumb, like, low-ball offer and insult these guys and, frankly, just waste paper and ink.
Yeah.
There is no need to do that.
Well, and so, an offer can mean different things to different front offices. I mean, you hear stories of some front offices will give players a written offer almost as a, I mean, as a favor where they can go out there and leverage that into something better if it's, say, a longstanding player. I do not think that's the way the Blue Jays will operate. I think that certainly under Alex Anthopoulos, he was very, careful with what he put down in print, essentially. So I don't think that they're just going to make offers for the sake of making offers. I do think that the Blue Jays would have a breaking point for both of these guys. And you kind of have to have a breaking point for essentially any free agent that you deem worthy of being on a major league roster. There's some price where you would be okay signing them. And I'm sure that applies to both these guys.
For sure. But, you also have to kind of be prescient of what else is out there. And if you tie up all of your time and resources on waiting for these guys to come down from where they are, or just trying to work out something with them, other options might leave you. Like, you have to have contingency plans, and you have to be actively working towards those contingency plans, and you have to kind of, at a certain point, even if a Jose or an Edwin aren't signed somewhere else, you kind of have to move on with other things before those other options disappear.
Yeah, and there are a lot of other options. I think that one of the better points that Ross Atkins made, or one of the more interesting points that he made earlier this week, was just the fact that this free agent market favors the Blue Jays. And I completely agree with him. When you look at a very weak class of free agent starting pitchers, and you look at a pretty deep class when it comes to outfield bats, first baseman, DHs, and that's exactly what the Blue Jays are looking for. So they do have a lot of options out there in free agency.
Yes, absolutely. What are some names that you expect Blue Jays fans to be hearing a lot going forward? I will start it off, and I will say Mike Napoli is a name that I think you're going to hear a lot of being tied to the Blue Jays this offseason.
Yeah, and I think that he makes sense along the lines of an Encarnacion, where he's a right-handed bat. He's not, you hear so much talk about the Blue Jays getting younger and more left-handed, which they would want to do ideally, but I think it all comes down to production and how much it's going to cost. I don't think that they're on this some sort of, just absolute no-holds-barred, we must get more left-handed and younger at all costs. I think that they want to get better, and one way for them to get better is probably to become better defensively in the corners and have a more balanced lineup that gets the platoon advantage more often. But I don't think that you have to do that at all costs. So yeah, Napoli makes sense. To throw some other names out there, at least in the free agent market, I think that you could look at switch hitters like a Carlos Beltran, a Henrys Morales. I think that when you talk about having the platoon advantage, those guys have it all the time. They both had essentially 30 homer seasons. They're older, but I don't know. I could see those guys being of interest at the right price.
Yeah, Morales was another one on my list of guys that I think you might hear tied to the Blue Jays. Nori Aoki is another one that I think that you're going to hear a lot of when you talk about a lefty bat and a guy who can fill an outfield corner. And he's not going to replace any kind, he's not a power hitter at all, but it does kind of profile a bit more speed, but a bit more contact, a bit more platoon advantage that the Blue Jays are looking for.
Yeah, and I think that he's on that list of guys that probably wouldn't be super expensive when you're looking. I think that, in the trade market, you're going to hear a lot of names, guys like Adam Eaton, Ender Inciarte, potentially a Charlie Blackmon. I mean, those guys are probably going to cost a lot in trades, so then if you look at free agency, you have someone like Dexter Fowler, who's a switch hitter. He's a really good player. I mean, I think that he might be a pretty expensive option along with Ian Desmond, but I think both those guys are really good players. And if you're looking at the top of the free agent list that the Jays might consider, and this is speculative on my part, but I think that those guys would be among the first players that you would take a look at.
Like Fowler, Desmond, Reddick. I'd put in that group as well as another guy that I think the Blue Jays might get priced out of them. I mean, we'll see. Seth Smith, perhaps another name that I think you might see the Blue Jays be tied to and he might be just a bit below that tier of that Desmond Reddick and whatnot. So, and one more they'll throw out there, Mitch Moreland, another guy, first baseman, lefty bat, wouldn't be too expensive. Has had some pop in Texas, maybe a bit more pop at Rogers Center, who knows? And maybe he ends up kind of like platooning with somebody. Who knows?
Right. So with Moreland, you could pair him with, you know, a righty bat, where say you go out and you add a Steve Pearce, someone like that.
Right.
And, you know, I think that Pearce is interesting in the sense that he gives you positional versatility. That's one of the reasons that I think Desmond's really interesting. I think even Sean Rodriguez is someone that they should take a look at, just because he can play in different spots. Not to say that he's some amazing player.
Yeah.
Chris Coughlin along those lines as well. And these guys are all different tiers. I mean, some of them are really good. Some of them are kind of, you'd say, bench players, borderline bench players. But I think that they're all worth a look. And it reinforces the idea that there is a lot of selection out there for a team in need of bats.
You see with the Cubs just how valuable that Zobrist type is, really, right? Like that multi-positional guy who, you know, and Zobrist even gives you a switch hitter. So, you know, it's just like, this guy will do anything, right? And like none of his offensive categories are going to blow you away. You're not going to look at his home runs and say, wow, this guy's got a lot of pop. You're not going to look at, you know, his walks or his batting average or whatever and just be like, wow, this guy's incredible. But he's a reliable, steady, consistent hitter who can play a ton of positions and is never at a platoon disadvantage. And that's pretty damn valuable.
Right. And if you look at this Blue Jays team, what they need is a strong supporting cast, because yeah, you could make the case that they already have star level players. I mean, they have Josh Donaldson, who's one of the 5-7 best players in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. They have Aaron Sanchez, who's an up and coming young starter. Even guys like Tulowitzki, Martin, they have enough star-level players. I think that if you can fill that in with some really capable players in the outfield corners, at first base, at DH, even backup catcher, I think that, you know, this is a team that's probably going to need, what, 50 games from its backup catcher next year? 40?
Certainly more than you were getting from Josh Tolley.
Yeah, so then that's probably worth spending on. I mean, I've mentioned the name Drew Butera before, but he's someone who's coming off a good season. Family ties to the organization. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's someone who might be a really nice pickup if the price is right.
Yeah, the backup catcher market is, there's a lot of names out there. Like, I don't know, Jason Castro, Hank Conger, AJ Ellis, you know, Nick Hundley, Jeff Mathis, De'Aaron Navarro, you know, Wilson Ram. I mean, there's a ton of guys out there. Giovanni Soto, Kurt Suzuki. There's a lot of ways you could go.
Any chance they bring Navarro back in your mind?
To me, with the backup catcher, and this is totally personal preference, I want a backup catcher who excels at one thing, and ideally it's defense. To me, De'Aaron Navarro doesn't excel at anything, right? Like on both sides of the ball, he's just okay. I want my backup catcher to be really good at one thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, De'Aaron Navarro doesn't really fit that for me. So if you could go and get like a great pitch framer, you know, or like a great defensive catcher, you know, a guy who has a lot of pop or something, right? Like, that's appealing to me. De'Aaron Navarro just doesn't check those boxes for me.
Yeah, and it's funny too, when you think about, okay, you want to have a good defensive catcher. I mean, a guy like Hank Conger has had so much trouble throwing. Same with Giovanni Soto. Even if Conger can frame well, he's not going to give you that shut down, the running game ability. So to me, when I look at that backup catcher market, I look at Butera, AJ Ellis. Both of those guys, I think, are going to be in pretty high demand. But at the same time, you don't want to be stuck with a nothing there.
Ellis would be great, I think. I think Ellis would be a nice fit. And I don't know if he'd be in super high demand, Ellis.
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, would you be stunned if he signed a 2-year deal worth $7
million? No, I would not at all. But that's money well spent, I think.
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with that. If the Blue Jays want to give him 3.5 per for the next 2 years, I'm fine with that. Even if he's probably 35, 36, whatever he is, that works for me.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. Sure. You know what I mean? Like a guy who handles pitchers well, good in the clubhouse, all that stuff. Like, you know, he's not a great hitter anymore, but, you know, good defensive catcher, minds his P's and Q's, that kind of thing. Like, I'm cool with it.
It worked for Kershaw. 35. Yeah. Yeah.
Good enough to catch Kershaw.
Yeah. Hey, that's probably more of a challenge than it sounds like, yeah, I would guess.
When you look at potential, so I wonder how much, and we kind of tried to ask Ross Atkins about this when we met with him earlier this week, and he hemmed and hawed, as he will, but I wonder how much trades will play into what the Blue Jays are able to accomplish this offseason. I think it's probably going to be a pretty big tool for them.
I would think it has to be, right? Yeah. Because they have so many needs. And like we were saying before, you want to have serviceable players at every single spot. You don't want to have a hole. And I think that's, you know, trying to think alongside this front office, I think that's the way that they would operate, where they want to avoid gaping holes. They want to establish depth. Clearly, they want a lot of that to come from the farm system, but that's not entirely realistic at a time that most of their prospects are in the lower minors. So you're looking at free agency and trades as the way to bolster that. So obviously, some can come from free agency, but it can't all come from free agency. So that's where you start looking at trades. And I don't know exactly who they would be comfortable trading, because if you're looking to add real pieces, other teams are going to ask about the Pilars of the world and the Stromans and the Asunas of the world. And then you start having some really tough discussions because those guys are key pieces.
Yeah, I know. And you're probably going to have to trade from your pitching, because that's where you kind of have, like, you don't really have a lot of major league position players that you can deal. Really?
Dalton Pompey.
Pompey, yeah, right?
Like, yeah.
Other than that, like, guys who have shown they can do it in the majors, who you would, I don't know, if anybody has some kind of value in Ezekiel Carrera, like, sure, but
I doubt you're getting, I doubt you're getting full value for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and even, you can even kind of put Pilar into that camp. Like, he can't hit, right? Like, he's a great defensive center fielder, but do you really think you get good value for him?
I bet that you would. Not to say that teams are going to give up elite talent, but I think there's enough of an awareness about his defensive ability. And if you're a team that wants to support a pitching staff, I think that adding Pilar would be a really good way to do that over the course of 162 games. So I think that he would have real value, where you could probably get something. You could probably get a good controllable player back for Pilar, would be my guess.
What's a good controllable player?
So,
because when I look at, so the Blue Jays would probably be looking for, like, kind of outfielders, right? Like, that kind of, like, lefty bats. So could you get, like, an Adam Eaton or, like, a Ender Inciarte, or,
you know, I'd have to look at their, I'd have to look a little closer.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, with someone like Eaton, who would have 2 years of control after this year, some power, that might be a roughly fair swap.
Yeah.
But then again, do the Jays want to do that? I mean, at some point you're losing a lot, even if you end up getting something in return. I mean, the idea of trading someone like a Pilar or an Asuna would be, I mean, that's a lot to give up.
What?
So,
oh, for sure.
Do you think they even contemplate that? Or is this one of those situations where they try to deal from around the edges with a guy like, you know, whoever it is, a Pompey, or they trade an Ezekiel Carrera? I mean, do you see them potentially trading a core piece?
I wonder. Because I also, and I wonder about what they do with the farm, because, you know, like, they've now had a year to kind of get a look at guys in the system. Dalton Pompey, Rowdy Tellez, whoever, right? Like, there might be some guys who the previous administration was high on, who Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, Gil Kim, et cetera, are not as high on, right? So there might be, you know, we might be overlooking the fact that, like, maybe they just don't like Connor Green that much, and maybe they'll trade him, right? Like, there could be something like that. Because if you're not going to touch your prospects at all, you really are left with the situation where you have to talk about trading a Marcus Stroman, you know, or a Roberto Osuna, like you said.
Just to circle back quickly on Eaton, his trade value, in my view, exceeds Pilar. So he's locked up to a really friendly deal, and just looking at kind of where he's at, I think that would be a lot. You need a lot to get Adam Eaton, and rightfully so. But
in Ciarte, perhaps?
Sure. I mean, that's the kind of, I mean, or you could look at a Colorado Rockies team that has a lot of outfielders right now, with
Black
the emergence
Mon.
Of, David Dahl, I think, might make some of those guys a bit more expendable than they would have been. So do you go down that path again of trading for another Rockies hitter? I don't know. We've seen it work out to some extent with Tulowitzki, where his hitting ability doesn't seem to have disappeared, even though he's left Coors Field.
The Blue Jays can make Shai Davide really happy if they trade for Cole Calhoun.
He has mentioned that name a lot of times. I think, again, Cole Calhoun.
I think Shai's just trying to create that.
Right.
He's just trying to make that happen.
Yeah, but Cole Calhoun's a really good player.
Yeah.
So that's not going to be an easy thing to potentially add.
Yeah. No, not at all. Shai loves Cole Calhoun so much. And he is really, he's just a solid, dependable player.
Yeah.
Right?
Even beyond solid, I would say.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, if you're the Angels, are you winning in the next couple of years?
No.
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 What are you doing?
They should blow it up. But that's I haven't seen them do that in the last little while, so I'm not sure that we can assume they're going to do that in this offseason either.
No. And really, so But what this will, what will dictate all of what the Jays are able to do is really what their payroll number is and how much money they have to work with. And so I've noticed a slight kind of change in the messaging. Not slight, like a pretty major change, really, in the messaging from the Blue Jays front office from this, from basically this, the last regime to this one. Whereas under Alex Anthopoulos, it was very, look, Rogers will give us some money, or Rogers will give us a number, we'll work to that number, and we'll make it work. That's what we do. With under Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, the messaging that we're hearing is, so we're going to bring some proposals to Rogers and some scenarios, and we're going to talk to them, and we're going to let them know what we think we can do with X, Y, and Z. That's a very, that's a much more reciprocal relationship, I think, than what existed prior.
Right.
Do you notice that as well?
Yeah, I have. And I think that you can attribute it to both sides, where there's been changes on the Rogers side as far as the leadership. And there have been changes, big changes, on the Blue Jays side. So now you're looking at a dialogue that seems definitely different than it was under Anthopoulos. And, you know, one way or another, they need to get that answer soon, because you can't go into an offseason not knowing what your payroll is.
I would even go so far as to say there at least there is a dialogue now. Whereas I think in the past, there really wasn't much communication or much cohesion, I guess, or, you know, what's a good word? Just they weren't really working together in a lot of ways. I think there was a lot of opposition between ownership and, you know, the Blue Jays were kind of like, Shai always likes to say that the Blue Jays were kind of a fiefdom. Fiefdom, whatever, you know, like, and it's kind of true in a lot of ways. Whereas now you see a lot more collaboration, and it's interesting because I bet that this offseason payroll is going to increase.
Yes.
I bet you, and I don't think it's going to go up to where they're over $200 million or something, but they ended up around 150 this year.
It's pretty close to that, yeah.
I bet you it's going to increase into that next, you know, in, you know, into that, within that next kind of range.
Yeah, I think that,
and that's interesting. We didn't, right? You know, that wasn't happening in the past,
right? And it's kind of gradually increased. Alex Anthopoulos and Paul Beeston would always say that, hey, they'd never gone to ownership and been declined.
Yeah.
So there's that, but then it's okay, what about the times that you thought about going, or, you know, what about the times that it was kind of understood that you were at your limit? For example, yeah, with the Irvin Santana situation couple springs ago, when the Blue Jays at that point are trying, yeah, to defer money collectively. That's, you know, not an ideal situation for a team.
It's not a good look.
Right. It's not the way you want to ideally do business. So yeah, it seems as though things are lining up pretty nicely for them now. And I do think that when you look at the needs on this team and you look at how well they're positioned as a franchise, you're probably more likely to see the payroll rise than fall.
It's interesting just to see how much things have changed over the last year, right? And a lot of people, you know, when Paul Beeston was, and, you know, inarguably he was kind of being pushed out in a lot of ways from this organization. And a lot of fans, I think, were saying, why? You know, why are we getting rid of this guy, this legend, da, da, da. In the last year, spring training facility is about to undergo massive, massive upgrades. A lot of money being spent there. The Rogers Center is going to have some very dramatic refurbishments, I guess, or, you know, renovations, upgrades. Like, that's in the pipeline. That's coming. High performance department, that got done. We've seen the front office expand. Ben Cherington, you know, moving into a completely new role. I mean, we've got, I think Gil Kim's role is new as well, I'm pretty sure. I know Angus Mugford's role is new. I don't know if somebody was doing Gil Kim's role before or not.
They would have had Charlie Wilson doing a lot of those same,
yeah,
things.
Exactly, yeah, right? So the front office has expanded. I mean, we've just seen a lot of things like that weren't happening under a previous regime now are happening. And we're seeing a lot more cooperation from ownership kind of saying, yeah, no, we'll like pay for this. Oh, do you have like a plan? Like, do you have something that you want to do and you can show us tangibly the effects that these moves will have? Cool. Like, we can get behind that. We can be reasonable about that. And I think that reflects that, you know, that extends to payroll as well.
Yeah. I think that there's no question this is a very different looking organization than the one that Mark Shapiro joined. And it's a much more complex front office structure. I mean, when you look, yeah, at the masthead on the Blue Jays front office, I mean, you just have so many different names, so many moving pieces. And in a sense, it's become a modern front office. I think that even more broadly, it might be more modern as an organization compared to, you know, Paul Beeston, who is a titan in the world of baseball and the baseball industry, the labor industry. but he's someone who came of age in a different era, whereas Mark Shapiro seems to be doing things in a way that's more in line with the way a lot of franchises are run on a day-to-day level.
Yeah, I think about, I remember doing a podcast probably around this time last year, and Mark Shapiro came on. I was kind of like, well, I would expect him to kind of modernize the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
You know, I'd expect a modernization to take place. I think that's what you're seeing. You know, we've just, the Blue Jays have kind of been just been dragged into the, what is this, the 21st century? Where are we now? Do we even say that when it's like 2016? I don't know.
Yeah, 21st century.
They've just been dragged into the present day, into right. operating like a professional sports franchise should in 2016, almost 2017.
We're getting there. Yeah. So it's definitely a difference for sure. And I think that they're ultimately going to be judged by wins and losses. That's how it goes in this sport, and that's how it should go. But this is a team that seems fully capable, especially if they have payroll. If they have payroll on their side and they're able to have some flexibility going into this offseason, they can do a lot of things.
Yes, absolutely. And we can do a lot of things in the second half of At the Letters, such as go over the over-unders from earlier this year and who knows what other craziness we'll get up to. All that and much, much more. And we continue on At the Letters.
Like what Josh has done this year from an offensive standpoint.
There's a drive to right and deep. Tuzza back. This ball is gone. They're going to say that it's interference. Laz Diaz, the second base umpire, already indicating that the fan reached over the fence, and they're going to call it a double. Mike Everett is the crew chief. He's at third base, but Laz Diaz went out into center field and immediately held up his hands, indicating there was fan obstruction.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're on sportsa.ca. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter. I'm at Arden Zwelling. Ben's at B. Nicholson-Smith. We are going to bring in our producer, Sam McKee. He's on Twitter, at Sam A. McKee. And he's going to recap these over-unders that we did many, many, many months ago. And I'm probably going to cry real tears. So let's do this thing, Sam.
This is my favorite time of the year. I absolutely love this. Revisionist history, nothing better here.
Exactly.
So the first one we did was pitchers used. The over-under was set at 10.5.
Okay.
And both of you guys took the over, and they actually only used 7. So,
wow,
which is pretty incredible.
That was for starting pitchers.
Yeah, starting pitchers used.
Wow. Okay, 0-1.
Wow. All right.
So Kevin Pillar on base percentage, we set it at .326.
Okay.
Ben, oh, I didn't get there.
Ben took the under.
Yes.
And Arden took the over. And the actual was .303.
Wow. You were very bullish.
.303. What was I thinking? That's probably like the league average for a center fielder or something like that.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin Pillar, man, just does not hit.
35 doubles.
It's weird, eh? Because he'll lead the team in doubles. He was probably like second to Josh Donaldson in hits or something like that. Like, and yet there are a lot of at bats that don't end well for him.
Yeah, he had the thumb thing, I guess, that Atkins mentioned.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
for me. But he's always kind of battling something, right? Like it hurts, man. Diving around on that turf,
yeah,
out there, that's concrete.
He's banged up all the time.
Oh, yeah. All right.
So we said the Devin Travis season debut. We set it at June 1st, and both you guys said over, so past June 1st. And it ended up being May 25th.
Wow.
So you're both wrong on that.
You proved this wrong.
Both wrong, yeah.
Well, all right, yeah.
You don't have anything else to add
to
that?
I got nothing else to add to that.
All right.
I'm trying.
Jay Happ ERA, and we set it at 4. And Ben took the under,
nice.
And Arden took the over.
We almost could have set that at 3 the way he pitched for so much of the year, right?
Oh, my God.
318.
I thought it was going to be over 4.
Yeah, that's what you said.
This is brutal.
That would have been
April
a fair
Arden
guess,
thought that's what it was going to be. April Arden.
I'm 0-4 right now.
Wow.
This isn't going well.
I mean, his career ERA is still probably around 4. It's 3.98.
Yeah.
Even including this year. So, I mean, 4 is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, he was pretty average. He was pretty ordinary for a very long time.
Yeah.
And now he's really good.
This next one is really awesome. R.A. Dickey strikeouts. We set we hummed and hawed during the over under pod about, we originally set it at 150 and then we moved it down to 125. So Ben took the under and Arden took the over and it ended up being 126.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yes.
126.
So we set a good number. The odds makers were good really good. Odds making. Really
yes.
good number.
And I'm on the board.
Wow.
Look out for me.
126. Oh, good for him.
So the next one is Brett Cecil's ERA, and it was 225. And this was after, remember, that we did it a couple games in after he'd already given up a couple runs. And both you guys said over, and it ended up being over at 393. So you're both right on that.
Wow. Can't believe we set the over-under that low, though, eh?
393. It's
crazy how quickly things change, man. Like, he was think about how dynamic he was last year, and then people were cringing when he came into a game. It's crazy how quickly things change.
Hey, man, so just 393 to match that three-year deal he's going to get, right, Ben?
He is getting a three-year deal. Mark it down.
So, wait, Ben's got three right now, and I've got two by my tally?
Mm-hmm.
I'm back in the game. I'm coming back.
We'll see. We'll see where that goes.
Josh Tolley homers at 1.5, and Ben nailed it under, and Arden said over.
So. That's the cruelest one ever.
Right.
He had already hit one.
Yeah, I love it.
He hit one like the second day of the season.
Yeah, and it was that really weird one that like the two grumpy old men were in the front row, and like he caught it over the fence, sort of, and it was reviewed. It was basically not even a home run, but they gave it to him.
Wow.
Hey, it still counts, man.
I guess.
It was off True Smiley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Major League Starts by Drew Hutchison.
So, we said Major League or Toronto Blue Jays?
No, you said Major League Starts, which was interesting.
Did he start
for the Pirates? In a way.
He might have.
So, it was 9.5 was the number, and you both said over, and he started 3 Major League games this year.
Were they all
for the Jays, one for the Pirates?
One for the Pirates, two for the Jays. Okay.
Oh, man. Is he in that rotation next year? Pittsburgh?
I guess he goes in as kind of a 5 trying to make it.
Yeah.
Like in that mix in spring training?
Is he out of baseball within the next, like, is he out of baseball by 2020?
Well, a lot of players are going to be out of baseball by 2020.
All right, is he out of baseball by, like, 2019?
I mean, it's certainly possible.
Possible.
Yeah. He needs to bounce back.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Go ahead.
All right, so Marcus Stroman inning pitched, and you guys set the number at 189.5, and you both took the over, and you're both bang on.
Nice.
There you go.
204.
204. Yeah, Marcus Stroman threw 200 innings this year.
Yeah, that's not even counting the playoffs.
Yeah, right? That's a lot of innings.
Yeah.
I wonder how many in total threw 200 innings. Probably not that many. Maybe like 30 guys or something like that.
In the big leagues? I think it was lower than that. I think it was around 15, 20.
15 or 20 guys, and Marcus Stroman was one of them.
Yeah.
How about that?
This next one is just absurd. Gavin Floyd starts.
Wow.
We set the number at 10.5.
What the
what were we thinking?
What planet?
I don't know.
Did that
but
happen?
We both took under, and the grand total was zilch.
Wow.
It was, I did think about it during the playoffs, so it was weird how he just dropped off the map entirely.
Yeah.
Like, he had that lat thing, I guess it was, like, kind of, I want to say mid-season, and then he went to Florida, and he was just never heard from again.
And yet,
nobody asked, nobody said anything. His locker was gone. Yeah. Like, the nameplate was gone. Everything was just gone.
He was hanging it with Stefan Robida.
Quite possibly. But he's someone still who, that signing was a big success for the Jays. $1 million, and they got 31 innings of essentially average production.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I know. It was just strange how we didn't hear, even like as the playoffs are starting up, like we didn't hear anything about him. You know?
He was throwing.
He's not exactly like a Kyle Schwarber or anything.
No.
But.
No. Far from it. But yeah, he was throwing a flat ground, I think was the last update I heard, which was probably in August.
Mm. All right.
Oh, God. Chris Colabello, OPS.
Wow.
Why do we do this?
Here we go.
If we just never revisited them, nobody would have asked. Nobody would have noticed. Like,
we set the number.
Why are we embarrassing
this
ourselves?
Is the most embarrassing part. We set the number at 8:30.
Oh, man. Tell me I took the under.
And both,
tell me I
both you extremely smart men took the under. Right. And the number ended up being 225, boys.
Wow. That was his OPS.
225. Just a bit under. Just a little under.
Oh.
Yeah.
Speaking of people we'll never hear from again.
Yeah, really. And now this next one is pretty compelling because you guys disagreed on it. And Michael Saunders homers at 19.5. And Ben took the under and Arden took the over.
Yeah, buddy.
Wow.
There you go.
24. He cleared it easily.
Yeah, buddy. There you go.
Yep.
But Wilner didn't win his bet with Kevin Barker, though. So he's probably lamenting
I'm
about
so
that.
I'm so sick of hearing about that. Every time. Michael Saunders would fart and Wilner would be like, hey, did you know I've got this bet with I'm still not opposed to the Blue Jays bringing back Michael Saunders. I think the organization is opposed to it, but I'm not opposed to it.
I bet they have a price. I bet they have a price where they would bring him back. I think that's the way that they look at a lot of free agents, probably him included.
If I would look at like bringing him back to be a guy who kind of splits his time between outfield, DH, and first base, right? Like split evenly in thirds. If you offered him a qualifying offer, you tie that around his neck, that just completely destroys his free agent market. You can't go out and really get leverage. And then in that 15-day window before he accepts it, you negotiate like a two-year $25 million deal or something like that, if he even had to go that high.
Yeah, that's the question, is if you value him at $25
million. Yeah, over two. I don't know. If he's going to hit 50 home runs over the next 2 years.
He hasn't done that yet in his career.
He's hit 24 last year.
Has he ever hit 50 in a two-year span?
Probably not.
I think we know he hasn't.
You and your
probably
facts.
Not. Yeah. Okay. The next one
he
is...
He hasn't played at Rogers Center every day for any... I think he'd stay healthier if he wasn't in the outfield as much.
He's a good player. He's a good
and
player.
Really, like the big downside with him is outfield defense.
Right.
So you mitigate that by not having him in the outfield as much. You mitigate the health thing.
It's just a question of whether you value him at 25. You know, he's going to make lots of millions of dollars and deservedly so. It's just a question of, does it get to 25?
What do you think the market
will
say about him?
And it does depend on whether he's qualified.
Yeah. All right.
Aaron Sanchez innings pitched, and we set the number at 149.5.
Oh,
wow.
And you both took over like smart men.
Wow. There you go.
Nice.
Way over. Over 200 in the aggregate.
The next one's a very interesting one. Two low games played. 129.5. And Arden took the under. Ben took the over. Actual number, 131.
Yes.
Jesus.
Plus playoffs.
Oh, that's a tough loss right there.
Wow.
That's a tough L to take. All right. Well, good for him.
So the combined
guys
bombs.
Guys can't catch up to Ben.
Combined bombs between Edwin, Jose, and Josh Donaldson. We set the number at 120.5.
Which is a huge over-under.
It is quite absurd. Ben, of course, took the under. And Arden, somewhat, a little bit fired up when I listened back to the audio. He took the over, which was not a good choice.
What was Arden saying at the time?
Oh, no, he's just saying, why not? That's a lot of Ardening on it, basically.
Yeah, I took some chances, right? I took some risks, okay? Sometimes you got to take some risks when you're at the old craps table, right? That's what I did.
The interesting thing is, it wasn't that far off. They ended up hitting 101 between the three of them, which is still really impressive.
It's not that far. If you had a full, healthy season of Jose Bautista, maybe they get close to it.
Right, exactly. Right? You needed all three of these guys.
So,
to
you knew Jose Bautista was going to miss time. You knew that.
You got three guys.
Knew that. Ben knew that. All right.
The next one is contract extensions. We set the over under at 0.5.
Smoky.
Yeah. Ben said under, and Arden said over, and the only one was Mr. Smoke.
Oh, just to see just a little image of what Justin Smoke is doing right now in this moment would be a welcome.
Yeah. Live look.
I guarantee you he's wearing Crocs, shirtless, just tooling around his property on a golf cart.
Are you just describing what you want to be doing right now?
Yeah, that as well, actually, now that you think about it, minus the Crocs.
And the last one is World Series
games.
Oh,
so I can't catch up.
The last one is World Series games.
Wow.
0.5. And unfortunately, it's the under, fellas.
And we both, that's not unfortunate for us.
Well, yeah.
We both took the under?
You both took the under.
It's unfortunate for you.
And guess what? They haven't played any World Series games. Didn't know if you noticed that or not, but they haven't played any.
Not yet.
No. Although I did watch, did you watch that game last night?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Man, seeing Schwarber come back is
seen
crazy.
That movie before, boys. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah. Miller. Yeah, it was nuts. Kluber was so good.
Kluber was amazing. Yeah. Kluber was so good. Yeah. Like, and they're going to bring him back in game four and then probably again in, if there is a game seven. I mean, the Cubs are going to have to beat him. He made the Cubs look just so ordinary.
Yeah.
So it's a really good team.
Of the 80 outs that Cleveland has recorded in the playoffs so far, how many of those do you think have been recorded by Kluber or Andrew Miller?
60?
38. Which is still pretty good.
That's a ridiculous guess, 60. Yeah.
Even still, for one starter and one reliever to essentially get half your outs,
right?
That's pretty crazy.
No, yeah, absolutely. No, that's pretty insane. It's an interesting World Series. There's a lot at play there. There are like storylines coming out the yin yang.
Yeah, I actually find that this is the World Series that I've been most interested in a while.
Really?
Yeah, and I watch. Well, I would watch every year, but I just find that, you know, we've seen so much of, say, the Red Sox, Cardinals, and Giants in the last few years.
Yeah.
That to not have any of those teams in it and to have two teams who have really obviously struggled for a long time, I just find it's a much more interesting World Series on that alone. And then when you mix in the specifics of Andrew Miller and Kyle Schwarber, even John Lester and throwing to bases, like I find that there are things within the game, like these secondary storylines that I'm very interested by it, like much more so than I normally would be.
Jason Hayward riding the pine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, he was their top. I don't know why they put Coughlin in over him. You know, if you're gonna go for.
He struck out twice.
Right. Yeah. And I get that Coughlin is a useful bench piece. Yeah. But at the same time, like, if you want offense, wouldn't you go to Contreras in that spot?
Yeah, probably. Is he their only backup catcher?
No, they have two because they have Montero, Ross, and Contreras.
Right.
They're carrying three catchers.
So, that would be the only reason not to.
Right.
Really. Yeah. Unless Chris, I don't know if Chris Coughlin had like good numbers against Kluber, and I can't imagine he saw him a bunch.
Maybe he's got the old one for one. That's, manager's favorite.
That's like part of the reason I think why Kluber looks so good. Like, I can't imagine many of these Cubs guys have seen him that much.
Right.
Like.
Right.
And like, especially the new Kluber that he is now, right? Like, he's, you know, he kind of pitches differently now than he ever has before. So, well, like, you just don't have experience. At least the Blue Jays got to see him a few times, right? At least they got to see him during the regular season. They might have seen him twice during the regular season. But yeah, these, like, you know, the Cubs hitters are just like, what?
Yeah.
Oh. What's his slider does what?
It's pretty crazy. So hopefully this series gets interesting and stays interesting. I mean, it's obviously just seeing the Cubs in the World Series alone, something that we haven't seen in our lifetime, something that no one listening has seen in their lifetime. It's just, well, actually, that's not true because they were in 1945. But for the most part, no one can really remember the Cubs in the World Series. And that alone makes it pretty awesome.
I don't know if there's anybody listening who was alive in 1945. Do you think? We reached that demographic?
Never know.
Well, no matter when you were born, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you continuing to listen as we will likely continue to do these throughout the offseason as things develop.
I would think so.
I would think so as well. Thank you to producer Sam McKee. Thank you to Ben Nicholson-Smith. Thank you to all of you for listening. My name's Arden Zwelling. This has been At the Letters.